Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, and all of it brought to you by Dollar Shave Club. Stop spending a fortune on gimmicky shave tech that you just don't need. Make the smarter choice by joining Dollar Shave Club. Get your first month for only $5 with free shipping by going to dollarshaveclub.com/martini. More on them a little bit later in the podcast. And Jim, let's start with the good martini, as we usually do if we're fortunate enough to have a good martini. And today we are. The governor of Guam. I'm guessing a few days ago, most Americans, including me, could not have named the governor of Guam. He's not in the news a lot, but his name is Eddie Calvo. And ever since North Korea in the past 24 to 48 hours has talked more and more about firing missiles towards Guam, foreshadowing a second martini that we're going to be talking about today, Guam has been more and more in the headlines. So Governor Eddie Calvo appeared with Brian Kilmeade, who was sitting in for Tucker Carlson on Fox News Wednesday night. And Jim, I think just his attitude, serious but not freaking out, is a good way to look at this, considering it's him and his people who are allegedly in the crosshairs here. Here's what he says about the North Korean threats.
Obviously, for our administration and for the people of Guam, there is concern and worry, but there's no panic. If you can recall, and just going back to 2013, this is about the third, fourth threat made by North Korea specifically to Guam, as well as other facilities or bases in Asia, as well as the states, Hawaii and the West Coast.
You know, you're pretty chill, Jim, when your basic reaction to this is, yeah, they threaten us with missile strikes every now and again. We're kind of used to it by now. But here's his recommendation for the people of Guam and anyone visiting Guam.
Right now, we got 160,000 American citizens in this island, 50,000 American citizens in the Northern Marianas. In any given day, we've got 10 to 15,000 tourists enjoying our shores. And we encourage everyone to go through their lives,
right,
and live them like you would do any other day.
And he also said he appreciated the reassurance from the government that if North Korea did do anything sinister, that obviously the arsenal of the U.S. military would be used in response to that. So, Jim, I think it's a good balance here, not joking it off, but not letting it consume him either.
Yeah, it's one of those moments where I guess in Guam, they've gotten so used to this that the weather reports include cloudy with a chance of North Korean threats. they don't have a lot of control over it. And so far, really nothing of substance comes from it. Yes, you know, North Korea has been firing missiles, but they've generally been firing them more in the easterly direction, in the direction of Japan or over Japan. And they, you know, look, it's a big ocean. Most missiles are just going to land in the ocean and not actually threaten anyone. Although apparently the last missile launch that North Korea did was about within 2 miles of a passenger airliner, a little close for comfort. But again, it's, you know, the odds of you randomly hitting an airliner when you're aiming in the middle of the ocean are pretty slim. Yes, we probably should not overstate this. There's no reason to panic. There are no air raid sirens going off. There's a long history of North Korea saying we're going to do this and then not doing this. Having said that, Greg, I haven't seen the visual of him. Please tell me he looks nothing like the mayor from Jaws.
He does not know.
The beaches are safe. Go out swimming. Da-dunt, da-dunt.
It's like a laid-back atmosphere. I've never been to Guam, but I have been to Hawaii, and there's just a different, more relaxed vibe going on, I'm guessing, in Guam as well, although perhaps not quite as relaxed as normal now that we move on to our second martini. This is courtesy of Politico. North Korea has announced a detailed plan to launch a salvo of ballistic missiles towards the U.S. Pacific territory of Guam, a major military hub and home to U.S. bombers. If carried out, it would be the North's most provocative missile launch to date. The announcement Thursday warned that the North is finalizing a plan to fire four of its Hwasong-12 missiles over Japan and into waters around the tiny island, which hosts 7,000 U.S. military personnel on two main bases and has a population of 160,000. Japan and South Korea vowed a strong reaction if North Korea were to go through with the plan. It is said the plan, which involves the missiles hitting waters 30 to 40 kilometers or 19 to 25 miles away from the island, could be sent to leader Kim Jong-un for approval within a week or so. It would be up to Kim whether the move is actually carried out. So Jim, obviously this is a more saber-rattling like we just talked about, but 19 to 25 miles, that's shorter than my commute. So it doesn't take a lot to be wrong from that distance. So let's hope that it doesn't happen, first of all. But if it does, that they don't miscalculate.
You know, Greg, this is in the morning jolt, I go through the long history of North Korean provocations and all the various ways that they have sometimes used very violent force against South Korea. They sank a South Korean naval ship. They shelled a island off the coast of South Korea that was inhabited, killed four people there. They periodically cross the DMZ and place landmines in near bases and barracks of South Korean troops. All of them are more or less surprise attacks, and this is a very dangerous habit North Korea has. When they want to send a message, they have no problem killing people in South Korea. And probably out of everything in this building tensions and potential confrontation, this is what worries me the most, because God forbid North Korea tries to do something like that directed more at American forces, firing a torpedo at a U.S. naval ship, or trying to fire artillery shells in the direction of U.S. Forces based in South Korea. I don't think U.S. forces will react calmly. And I don't mean to say that they're going to fly off the handle. I just think that South Korea has learned to live with a certain level of provocative violence from North Korea that I'm not sure Americans are willing to tolerate. So when they say, don't worry, we're going to fire missiles at you, but we intend to miss by 20 miles. Okay, what happens if they overshoot by 20 miles, considering the fantastic quality of right. North Korean missile technology? It feels like a really crazy, dangerous move. It's almost like a William Tell. Don't worry, we're not going to hit you. We're just going to shoot in your direction. And you got to wonder if this is North Korea will actually go through with this. The other thing which is kind of bizarre is almost like they want to see what our reaction is when they make a threat like this. So we will see what happens. But clearly, you know, North Korea is not backing down. There is a certain irrationality to the way that North Korea is behaving. And when they announce, oh, don't worry, we're going to do a missile test in this direction towards your forces, they seem to have no interest in calming things down and seem to be figuring out, oh, let's put more stuff on the Jenga tower. Let's rock the table of the Jenga that we're building this Jenga tower on and see what happens. And it's just hard to feel confident when you know, North Korea is willing to take moves like this.
It's true. And I like, again, what Governor Calvo said to his own people. I would also like to provide some reassurance for one person in particular, and that's Georgia Congressman Hank Johnson. If we have if we have to beef up troops on Guam, I assure you, sir, the island will not tip over, which is what the congressman asked military officials a few years ago. If, in fact, they added more U.S. equipment and personnel on Guam, he was worried because it was such a small island and so narrow. That if we put too much military equipment on one side, that it would literally tip over. The answer was no, sir, it will not.
You know, Greg, I never want to hear a Dan Quayle misspelled potato joke ever again. Anyway, I don't know. Are you feeling like you're getting a 5 o'clock shadow?
I think a lot of people in the Pentagon are, yeah.
Yes, so for anybody at the Pentagon who can feel that stubble growing in, Dollar Shave Club is the smarter choice. If you join Dollar Shave Club, you will get a great shave at a great price, conveniently delivered right to your door. It is a no-brainer. You no longer have to schlep to the store to buy a cheap disposable razor that gives you a cheap shave. No longer do you need to spend a fortune on razors with gimmicky shaving tech you didn't need. If you think about it, you see these commercials, they're constantly saying, oh, we've got 47 blades, and you know, they have little cool CGI. I think they would turn it to Transformers in one of those commercials. But really, Dollar Shave Club, I've described this to you, perfectly fine, perfectly cool, gives you a very close shave, easily replaced, not expensive. And what's more is that when you get that, you also send you a Dr. Carver's Shave Butter, which makes the blade glide ever so gently and gives me a very smooth shave. The shave butter is transparent for a more precise shave. It helps prevent ingrown hairs. And of course, it fights razor bumps.
So now listeners to Three Martini Lunch can make the smarter choice by joining Dollar Shave Club. For a limited time, new members get their first month of the executive razor with a tube of their Dr. Carver shave butter for only $5. And that's with free shipping. After that, razors are just a few bucks a month, a dollar a week, i.e. Dollar Shave Club. That's $15 in value for only $5. In your first month's box, you get an awesome weighty handle, a full cassette of four cartridges, and a tube of the shave butter. After your first month, replacement cartridges ship automatically at their regular price. There are no hidden fees. There are no commitments. Cancel any time you like. You can only get this offer exclusively at dollarshaveclub.com/martini. That's dollarshaveclub.com/martini. All right, Jim, on to the crazy martini in multiple ways today. Let's go to the pages of the Hill newspaper. Slightly more than half of Republicans say they would support postponing the 2020 presidential election if President Trump proposed it to make sure only eligible American citizens can vote, according to a new survey. According to a poll taken by two academic authors and published by the Washington Post, 52% of Republicans said they would back a postponement of the next election if Trump called for it. If Trump and congressional Republicans proposed postponing the election to ensure only eligible citizens could vote, support from Republicans rises to 56%. Pollsters found that 47% of Republicans believe Trump actually won the popular vote, and they think there's a massive problem with voter fraud. So, Jim, this is crazy on a number of fronts. First of all, the fact that half of Republicans are perfectly fine postponing the constitutionally mandated scheduling of presidential elections. At the same time, though, the freakout over something Trump hasn't even remotely hinted at is also pretty crazy. I mean, you could come up with almost anything to suggest what the president might call for and have a hypothetical poll, but it doesn't mean it's any closer to reality.
I'm looking at this, and I kind of wonder how much of this is, if you ask a Republican, would you back Trump if, that they almost tune out the second half of the sentence, right? That they want to support the president. He's their guy. They probably voted for him. Yes, I support the president. And, you know, if anything beyond that. Or it might be seen that they feel like if they say no, then they're downplaying voter fraud and, you know, people voting illegally and things like that. You and I have discussed in the past. Yes, it does happen. It is unlikely to happen on a scale that's going to swing a presidential election. Trump's claim that his entire margin of defeat in the popular vote is made up by illegal immigrants is really not likely. There's you know, nowhere near the kind of evidence you'd want to see that. But in a circumstance where you had Florida being decided by about 500 some votes in 2000, or some of the close races we've seen in Washington State and Minnesota, well, then, yeah, maybe you do have to worry about this. People do get convicted for voter fraud, not on a massive scale, but it does happen. Having said that, the idea of, well, I think because of voter fraud, we can't have the election. As Ala Pundit at Hot Air points out, we had a presidential election during the Civil War.
Right.
Right. I mean, you'd like to think short of maybe something like the alien invasion in Independence Day, right, where cities are getting nuked. That's the only scenario we would actually say, you know what, we're just not doing an election this year. Maybe, God forbid, a really horrific Ebola outbreak or something like that, where it was unsafe to go outside of your house or something like that. So it was interesting. He points to a poll from last summer. It was a conservative polling outfit, WPA Research, that says, you know, they asked Democrats, would you prefer to cancel the 2016 presidential election between Clinton and Trump if it meant President Obama could serve another term? Lo and behold, 67% of Democrats would take a third term. You look at this and you're sitting there thinking, by any chance are these pollsters trying to make the respondents look stupid? I mean, some of the blame undoubtedly goes on the respondents. If somebody says to you, should we suspend elections, and you live in a democracy, you say no. I feel like it's the Ghostbusters. If somebody asks if you're a god, you say yes. If somebody says, do you want to suspend elections, you say no. And you don't even really have to worry that much about the second half of the sentence there. Too many people fought and died for that right to vote. Once you suspend an election, it's very hard to imagine a scenario in which the person in power who has just suspended elections generally don't do them later. Well, I guess I should say there is one example in recent history of people suspending an election and then actually holding it several weeks later. Greg, it's people very easy to forget. September 11, 2001 was primary day in New York City.
That's right.
And they were supposed to have their mayoral elections. And obviously, when you're undergoing a massive crisis, I believe they closed the polls and everybody's focus was elsewhere. So not utterly inconceivable that a locality might be dealing, you know, flooding or you know, some other natural disaster that makes it impossible for people to safely go to the poll. But the idea of suspending an entire national presidential election, particularly over something like voter fraud, allegations of voter fraud, is it's an embarrassing result. And anybody who responded to this saying yes should go sit in the corner and think about what you've done.
Oh, Jim, it's fun to laugh about that when we're not talking about missile strikes in the Pacific. So that's good.
Who would have guessed that suspending presidential elections would be the happy, funny topic on today's Three Martini Lunch?
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Don't forget to visit our good friends at the Dollar Shave Club and get your $15 in value for just $5. DollarShaveClub.com/martini. DollarShaveClub.com/martini. And tune in on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.